My friends, spring is in the air, and this upcoming concert season will be all about the way you look and about your boots. And Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience like this. If you cannot make it into the store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your next favorite pair of boots today.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
On this episode of TFL Talking Trucks, we're trying to answer one very important question. Who is going to be first to market with an all-electric pickup truck? And to do this, I have on the line here a longtime friend of the show, Alex Dykes from Alex on Autos. Welcome, Alex.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for joining TFL Talking Trucks podcast. If you love pickup trucks or big full-size SUVs, if you love trailering, towing, and going off-road, this is the right place to be. Together, we can make this podcast the most popular ever.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's talk about electric trucks. I'm intrigued. Yeah. I have one on order. I don't know if it'll ever arrive, but hey, I ordered one.
Which one do you have on order?
I have the RT1 or R1T, whichever this little guy is. They send you this, when you order one, they send you this nifty little sort of watercolor drawing thing to get your hopes up, but then they keep pushing the date back, so.
Right, just to be clear, I want to make sure people get it. Rivian R1T is the truck you ordered. And yep. When did you order it? This was what, at the LA Auto Show, what, a year and a half ago or so?
Yeah, it was, I mean, the day the pre-orders opened, so it's been a long time.
Yes, and of course, I'm Andre Smirnov at tfltruck.com. So let's start the show. So recently, the news came out that Rivian officially stated that their R1T all-electric pickup truck is going to reach market in June of 2021. Mm-hmm. So just a little background story, right? So they initially were saying their electric vehicles were going to be on sale at the end of this year, 2020. Then early 2021, but now it's officially June.
Yep.
So this is where the question came. Who's going to be first to market? Because manufacturer schedules are very dynamic right now, especially with the virus and the mm-hmm. pandemic, right? So all the schedules seem to be shifting. So that's why I wanted to have the discussion with you. And tell the audience a little bit about Alex on Autos. What do you do there?
So we focus on very consumer-focused car reviews. So, you know, how many bags fit in the trunk? How do child seats fit in there? How does it cost? What's the value comparison to other cars out there? We focus a lot on value and comparisons. So we try and stay away from ultra-expensive vehicles, although I have to follow my sword. I just had a Rolls-Royce Wraith last week. So,
what?
You know, hey, it happens now and then.
Okay.
But generally speaking, we focus on cars that sell over 100,000 units a year primarily, and we will take anything that sells over 10,000 units a year and costs under $100,000. So we're laser focused in that window. Because we're located in California, we do a lot of EV and hybrid videos. So we just had the Ford Explorer hybrid, for instance, in for a video. And I tow a lot personally, so towing falls into some of those videos a lot. We have a towing series on the RAV4 hybrid towing, for instance, where we drastically overloaded it and then climbed up 7,000 feet.
Yeah, and we do a lot of towing on TFL truck as well. Mm-hmm. We tow, of course, in Colorado on the Ike Gauntlet at over 11,000 feet of elevation, but you focus a lot of your attention to crossover and SUV towing, right?
We do, yeah, because I'm always torn. I've always been this person that wants a truck, and then every time I've bought a vehicle, I end up with an SUV instead for a variety of different reasons, some practical, some not. The big one came down to cost this last time. The Durango is cheaper than a comparable Ram 1500, so box checked. You know, you can overload it. I've been naughty and towed 9,500 pounds with it before, and it was totally fine. So,
yeah. Well, let's save that conversation till a little bit later. Okay. Let's focus on the all electric trucks.
Yeah.
And then go to a little bit SUV versus truck. So let's go down the list, right? So, several companies are introducing, brand new companies actually introducing electric vehicles or electric pickup trucks to the market, or that's the hope, that's what they're working towards. And then there's some existing OEMs, you know, major manufacturers like Ford, General Motors, and others who are also introducing electric trucks. So I wanted to kind of go down the line and discuss each one really briefly and kind of put it up against this measuring stick that Rivian has here with the June 2021 introduction of their pickup truck. So, Alex, let's go over first the Rivian truck really, really briefly. Can you kind of throw some specs our way?
So, I mean, the Rivian truck seems interesting because they're claiming half-ton sort of capability in a form factor that's more mid-size truck. It's not quite half-ton-like, and that's one of the things that intrigued me. Is I personally have the need to tow over 7,000 pounds on a regular basis, but I don't really want something enormous. So I was intrigued by that. They also have a lot of practical, nice touches. You know, they got the frunk up front. They've got some funky storage behind the cab. They've got an inverter in the bed, which is not as powerful as the F-150 hybrid, but still pretty good for a truck. And they're promising off-road ability, sort of, I guess maybe you'd say gladiator-like, really, off-road ability is what they're promising with the Rivian, as well as, you know, crazy performance and tank turns because of the four-motor design, so you can just turn around in circles really easily. So it seems really cool. Theoretically, it seems like they're going to be first to market because supposedly the design is final. Supposedly the factory tooling is being worked on right now. And they have, you know, their production dates have moved out, but it seems like there's been progress along the way. Mm-hmm. And we see a little bit more detail than we see out of GM with the Hummer. And obviously there's no Ford EV that's comparable just yet. And the Cybertruck really seems to be, you know, vaporware.
Well, yeah, so Cybertruck made its debut, and huge debut, actually, last year, right?
Yes, debut.
That was the prototype that everybody talked about, it seems, in November of last year in 2019. And of course, that's kind of still the elephant in the room because Tesla has been around as a company for 10 years or a little bit more, more than 10 years. And they seemed to kind of break the mold, in my perspective, at least. You know, they promised a lot, and then over the years, they're moving towards, in my view, just delivering on a lot of those promises. You know, they now have, what, you know, three vehicles on the market, the Model S, the Model X, Model Y, Model 3, so four, right?
So four, yep.
And more coming. You know, the Roadster is eventually going to be here sometime, the next Roadster. They're working on a semi truck.
A semi, yep. And see, that's in my head. That's why I think the Cybertruck is going to be later than some people are hoping for, because they've got so much on their plate, and Tesla has proved that they've yet to prove, I should say, that they can roll out multiple models at a time. I have no doubt that it's coming. it's a when question. So they've got to get through the Roadster first. They've got to get through the Model Y launch issues. Then they've got to get through the Roadster. Then they've got to get through the Semi according to their timeline, and then onto the truck. And yes. I would say if the truck, if the Tesla beats the Rivian to market, I will eat this hobby horse live on air right here.
Okay, you have a little pony, little toy pony.
Yeah, it's a hobby horse on a stick. I have no idea why it's in my studio, but somehow it ended up here.
If they beat Rivian to market, you will eat it on live.
I will TV. Eat this hobby horse, yes. I will just saw it up and consume my hobby horse live on air.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, what's happening, right? So Rivian has a factory in Normal, Illinois. They, like you mm-hmm. said, they've outfitted the factory with a lot of tooling needed to build the truck. And like you said, it's a four-motor vehicle, basically four electric motors, one for each wheel. Not in hub motors, though.
Correct.
Right? They're inboard, and there's still drive shafts going down to the wheels. But it, according to them, it allows them to have very high-precision all-wheel drive and, you know, torque vectoring, all the cool stuff that high performance vehicles have, not just trucks.
Right.
So that's that. Tesla just recently, several days ago, announced that they're breaking ground and actually creating a new factory. They call it the Terra factory, I believe, near Austin, Texas. So,
yeehaw.
Yeah. So now there is actually some footage on YouTube where they're showing, you know, bulldozers and earth movers moving dirt. Where the mm-hmm. factory is going to be placed. And their website on Tesla.com says the Cybertruck is coming at the end of 2021. So right now, according to them, they're not going to beat the Rivian schedule. Right. But like you said, that timeline for Tesla Cybertruck seems very aggressive.
It does seem aggressive. And, you know, maybe it's possible because we don't know. I mean, we don't know all the internal workings at Tesla. It's possible that maybe they're prioritizing Cybertruck over Roadster. And so maybe Roadster is going to be the one that's late. You know, we don't necessarily know. But we do know, based on what we've seen of the Cybertruck, that truck, as shown, is probably not going to be what we're finally going to see, because it's not going to meet crash test standards that way. It's not going to meet FMVSS headlight standards the way that it's designed. So, you know, it may have a futuristic look, but I doubt we're going to get what they showed, you know, on stage.
Yeah, so we discussed two companies so far, Rivian and Tesla. We have to discuss, I think, the next in line, and I'm trying to organize these in the order of kind of the funding that the companies have. So Rivian has a lot of funding. They recently announced another, $2 billion mm-hmm. or $2+ billion of investment, in addition to the Amazon and Ford investments.
Right. It's like, aside from Tesla, I think as far as startup companies go, Tesla's obviously proved that they're good at staying in business. They haven't gone bankrupt, and they're good at getting investor cash in. So I think that a second from them, as far as new companies go, I think Rivian's in the best place, because they do have a lot of external investments. You know, they've got orders from Amazon. They've got, you know, partial investments from other auto manufacturers, et cetera, going in there.
But now the third company I want to discuss right now for the next upcoming electric truck is Nikola. And mm-hmm. I wanted to get your opinion on this.
Because I'm really intrigued by the Badger. I mean, aside from the name, I think the name is a little silly. I don't know if I want to be driving a Badger down the road.
What about the Honey Badger? Would you like?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe a hedgehog. It could have been a Sonic hedgehog. I don't know. the name aside, I'm intrigued because it's, of course, going to be a plug-in hydrogen truck. And that makes more sense in my head, if you can get the hydrogen.
Yeah, so now let's talk briefly about Nikola. Nikola is a younger company still. They've been around for several years, maybe up to 4 to 5 years. And they initially focused on big semi-trucks. And they talked about hydrogen fuel cell, like you said, to actually power their electric semis. And they've been working kind of a little bit on the radar, so to speak, for a while. But now they've made a big splash recently, not just with the Badger introduction, but also by going public with their kind of, reverse merger, I think. And I will never understand what they did. But
you'll have to get Anton to explain that one.
Yeah, Anton will have to help us to explain that. But but now they're also getting capital, right, based on that.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Badger, like you said, they're going to have two versions of it. First, all electric battery powered one. And then next up, it would be kind of battery powered in conjunction with hydrogen fuel cell. And they're quoting up to 600 miles of total range. So whereas what the R1T Rivian is around 400 miles maximum, right?
As long as you're not towing anything.
As long as you're not towing. We'll talk about that a little bit later because we've had experience with towing.
Yeah, we all have.
And it decreases drastically. The range goes down drastically. But they're quoting 600 miles on the fuel cell technology. But then, of course, you're going to ask me, well, Andre, where are you going to get hydrogen, right?
Well, that's the interesting part is Nikola seems to be interested in putting hydrogen filling stations across the country. So I think that's going to be, that'll be the key is can Nikola, can they launch the vehicle? Can they launch a fueling network as they're claiming? Because the claim has been that they want to focus on the semi thing as well. And so they're promising this nationwide network of filling stations for hydrogen semis. And then also all those stations will have the same H70 connector to fill any hydrogen fuel cell vehicle at those same locations. And that's something the other fuel cell makers haven't been willing to do.
And you've had experience with this with a Hyundai Nexo, correct?
Yep. So we have a long-term Nexo that we leased. We are in year two. Yeah, I think year two of the Nexo lease. Mm-hmm. And it's been great so far in our very limited window. And my office happens to be right next to a hydrogen station practically. It's about a quarter of a mile away. And there are two hydrogen stations on my way from the office to home. And then it's used primarily here at the office. Our employees drive it primarily for pickups and deliveries of things on the other side of the business. And there are also some hydrogen stations very close to some of our customers there.
And whereabouts are you?
We're in San Jose, Silicon Valley, capital of the world. But outside California, obviously, filling is very limited. There are stations in Canada and there's some in Hawaii that are public. And supposedly, it looks like the Eastern Seaboard will be next. New England up there, Massachusetts and further north. It looks like that's going to be the next place for hydrogen. The experience is very gasoline-like. That is the one benefit. So hydrogen fuel cell vehicles seem to, the range predictions seem to be more accurate than EVs. Even if you're driving the Nexo hard, the range prediction seems to track a little bit more along the lines of a gasoline vehicle. Okay. And there's just more energy on board. The Nexo contains about double the energy available in any current EV. Now, fuel cells aren't as efficient, obviously, as storing the energy, so you don't get as much out of it, but that's being improved on, and the weight involved with fuel cell technology is a lot lower than batteries. So the more weight you take out of a truck, the more weight you can put back in terms of payload or towing. So there definitely seem to be some advantages for the truck, but infrastructure is always the bear.
Yeah, let's talk about price. You mentioned price a little bit. Mm-hmm. So really quickly, so the Rivian R1T starts at around 69,000. This is before incentives, right?
Yeah.
69.
It will get the full credit, thank God.
Yeah, so about 70 grand, right? So the Cybertruck is more aggressive. The dual motor Cybertruck is first, according to Tesla, at about 50 grand. So that's quite an aggressive price, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And of course, now the Badger, Nikola Badger, starts at about 60 grand for the battery model and 90,000 to buy with a fuel cell. Yeah. And what the fuel cell basically gives you, like you were explaining, you can quickly refill with hydrogen, right? Have a smaller mm-hmm. battery. So you kind of sort of trying to control your curb weight on your vehicle a little bit more, but also using hydrogen to create electricity to power the electric motors. So it seems like a good solution other than in Colorado, we don't have any access to hydrogen right now.
The problem with electric range when towing, which I know we're going to dive into more a little bit, just was highlighted for me relatively recently because in my head, I was really excited about the electric truck because I don't generally tow long distances. So most of my towing, heavier weights, et cetera, is like taking the tractor in for service, taking the excavator in for service, et cetera, or hauling a vehicle around on a car trailer. Or other large loads on our flatbed or box trailers. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, it's within the Bay Area, greater San Francisco Bay Area or Monterey Bay Area where I live. So 50, 60, 70 miles maximum, generally speaking. And I thought the truck would be perfect for that. But then this year, I've actually made two long distance trips to Fresno, California and back. And that highlighted the fact that I don't think I could do that round trip on a battery charge.
How many miles was that?
That's 220 miles-ish each way.
Uh-huh.
And so about 440 miles round trip. So even unladen, none of the vehicles we're talking about really would realistically make that round trip.
Yeah.
Because there are mountain passes involved. So depending on which way you go, you're climbing up 3,000 to 2,000 to 3,000 feet. And there are multiple. So you'd be, you know, you'd drain your battery pretty quickly.
Yes, but also you're regaining some energy on the way down, right?
A little bit, yeah.
So traditional trucks, and we can touch on this a little bit, right? Gasoline-powered or diesel-powered pickups, you know, you're not really gaining any energy.
Right.
Your braking energy goes into heat, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
So
you don't really gain too much energy back. I mean, that's sort of the fallacy that a lot of EV fans, hate to describe them all this way, but some EV fans fall into this trap of thinking that somehow you're going to regain all of your energy going back down the hill.
No.
And the reality is you gain maybe about 5% back is what we've seen. So climbing up the hill. I live in a mountainous area. So, you know, I go up and over a 2,200 foot mountain pass every day. And you gain about 5% of the energy that it took to get you up the hill back going down the hill. So it's not a lot at all.
Well, yeah, it's not free energy, right? If you regained all of the energy that it took you to climb on the way down,
mm-hmm.
you'll have a perpetual motion machine.
Right. But I do like the idea of regenerative braking for keeping your trailer speed, your towing speed under control. I really like that idea because, in a vehicle with a very small battery, like a hybrid, you don't have that regen braking ability going downhill. And then it's going to fill up after the first few hundred feet of going down a steeper slope. And then you're just left with your friction brakes because you're not going to get much engine braking out of a lot of modern hybrids. So I like the concept of the tow vehicle with a bigger battery so you can stuff electrons back in and not have to use your friction brakes because that's going to save you when in an emergency. Your brakes are going to be nice and cool.
Yeah, and also it saves wear and tear on your braking system.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of advantages, of course, to electrified pickup trucks.
Yep.
But then, of course, diesel and gas-powered trucks, they have the benefit of a lot of energy density, right? A lot
yes.
of people talk about how much energy is in your fuel tank, which is a
exactly.
lot.
It's a lot.
I have a conversion factor here on my sheet. It says 1 gallon of diesel fuel, number two, low sulfur, is equivalent to around 38 kilowatt hours of
yep,
energy.
It's a lot. Now, so, I mean, and of course, even though your diesel engine is not going to be 100% efficient, actually, it's wildly inefficient
right.
as far as these metrics go. It's so much easier to put an extra gallon or two on your truck and, of course, fill in 5 minutes that it just doesn't matter as much. And that's sort of the sales proposition for hydrogen as well, is that, you know, a kilogram of hydrogen is approximately equivalent to a gallon of diesel in energy density.
Mm-hmm.
So either gasoline, diesel, or hydrogen, you're just going to get more energy on the vehicle in the same amount of space and same amount of weight.
And time, also very
yeah, different. And time, yep, right. All of the above.
Yeah, which is really interesting, which is why the Nikola story is intriguing. Mm-hmm. And we talked about to market time, right? So let's touch on the Nikola Badger time to market, which is kind of unknown at this point. So
yeah.
on the website, they list the Badger as a 2022 model. So mm-hmm. at least they kind of stated that. So which means to me, maybe introduction in 2021, maybe at the end of the year, it's not really clear at the moment exactly when the Badger will hit the market. Or
if
which
I were
version.
A betting man, it's probably going to be the EV first, maybe December-ish.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess.
So we'll have to check with them properly, you know, and actually try to get an answer out of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I know they broke ground on their semi-truck plant in Arizona,
yes.
which is for their semi-truck business. And that's still several years away. They're building electric semis in Europe using other help with other manufacturers. And actually the Badger truck, they're actually in talks with other OEMs here in the United States to use their production capacity to build the Badger.
Yep.
So that's really interesting. And also,
that's their benefit, is that they've actually built things. I mean, they're not building them 100% themselves like Tesla is, but they've shipped more things than Rivian has.
Yeah. So Nikola has a very interesting kind of model to do this. And they're also thinking about using whichever OEM they pick, their kind of dealership and service network, mm-hmm. Which is also very kind of mind-boggling, because you're combining brands, and that's, or not combining brands, but you have, I don't know, you go to one OEM dealership, right? And there's a section that says Nikola, right? So mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure that how that's going to work. Speaking of combining brands, let's move on really quick to the GMC Hummer.
Yes, the GMC Hummer.
Right. So as everybody knows, you know, Hummer brand was around in the early 2000s. And it was this kind of really lifestyle, off-road oriented brand based on the military vehicle initially, and then on and on with General Motors.
And it was very, very rah-rah, you know, very, very Arnold Schwarzenegger, who famously had a bunch of Hummers.
And he also advertised, you know, with them and used, you know, he was in their marketing programs. So Arnold was huge on that. And I think Arnold might be huge on that again. Well,
he could,
I don't know.
Because he electrified a Hummer, so he could be.
Yeah, he electrified the Hummer. He electrified the G-Wagon, I think.
Yeah.
So he is big on electrification these days. So I don't know for sure, but you know, LeBron James is also on board with marketing the Hummer EV. So now the Hummer EV is coming back, or I should say the Hummer brand is coming back under GMC umbrella.
Yep. So as a trim, as a model rather than a brand, which is super interesting, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
And as a truck, and they never actually, I mean, they kind of had the truck SUV thing, but they never had a truck before. So I'm also intrigued by that.
Yeah, well, they had the H3T, which was technically like a Chevy Colorado dressed.
Yeah, with upgrade. The tiny bed and the bigger. Yeah, it was kind of funky.
Yeah, so they never truly had a pickup truck like an F-150 would be.
Right.
And it looks, we don't know a lot about the Hummer, by the way.
That's true.
They were supposed to make a debut, world debut in May of this year, 2020. The debut was delayed, but their website says the GMC Hummer EV electric vehicle is coming in the fall of 2021. So that's after September, right? Or September or after that.
Right.
So it doesn't look like GMC will beat Rivian the way it's stated currently.
Right.
Market. It might be Tesla though.
In my head, I would assume that GM will beat Tesla, because GM has been pretty on target with their product launches. I mean, it's unusual for a mainstream major manufacturer to be as late as Tesla is with their vehicles, right? So it's like manufacturer may push it back a month or two, but they're pretty on time. And of course, they have a long history of producing EVs, because they're the only other company that's fully run out of EV tax credits because of the Volt and Bolt sales.
Yeah, and obviously all of these manufacturers are stating insane power numbers. You know, 3.0 seconds, 0 to 60 acceleration times for these trucks in range. GM is also saying about 400 miles maximum of electric range. And this GMC Hummer EV truck, they teased it with, you know, removable roof panels.
Mm-hmm. So
if the world is crazy about that, right? The Bronco just...
Yes.
with convertible top, removable panels, the Wrangler is there, the Gladiator truck is there. Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of like a 1980s Camaro with a T-top.
It might be a little bit more than that.
Is it going to be a fad thing? Is the removable panel going to be a fad thing like the T-top? Because, you know, nobody T-tops anymore. So, I don't know.
No, and I think the reason was there was nowhere to put them. Right, you take your T-tops off, you have this, you know, nice open air, but where do you store them? Do you throw them in your garage? Are they going to get scratched? You know, do you put them in your trunk, you know, in your bed? You know, what are you supposed to do? So that's going to be really interesting. And of course, GM is also quoting these, you know, high performance numbers, monstrous torque, and also a single motor, dual motor, and tri-motor configurations. Mm-hmm. So they talked about that, and they talked about their new kind of chemistry for their batteries. But we don't know, once again, a heck of a lot.
So
next up, I want to move to Ford really quick. Because they announced for 2021 model year, F-150 hybrid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is supposed to be a twin turbo V6, the 3.5 liter, in conjunction with a small electric motor sandwiched between that and the 10-speed automatic, and then a small battery, all wrapped into this regular hybrid, not a plug-in.
Right.
So tell me
It sort of looks like Ford Explorer hybrid with twin turbo V6 rather than the 3.3 liter V6 that the Explorer gets.
Yeah.
From what we know, it's the same automatic transmission and the same electric motor that's in the Explorer rather than the Aviator. So they explored and then swapped in the 3.5 liter twin turbo.
Yeah, and the 3.5 liter twin turbo F-150 has so far hasn't lacked for power. I mean,
no.
It was always a powerful truck. And now you're adding electricity to it, you know, being mild, you know, kind of mm-hmm. a small electric motor and a small battery. So tell me about your experience recently with your Explorer towing. Can you tease some of that information?
Sure. Yeah, I was intrigued by the Explorer. Little bit of back history here. You know, I have a 2018 Durango, and I bought the Durango because of its towing capability. Well, but I should say I leased it in 2018 because of its towing capability. And the reason I leased it is because the Explorer was coming, and it was supposed to be, and we thought, you know, maybe the Explorer would be the towing thing that we were all promised, because we knew there was going to be a hybrid. We knew the hybrid was going to be able to tow. We knew there were going to be twin turbo V6s in there. We knew there was going to be an ST. So all that was teased and was out there. And in my head, I was thinking, this is going to be perfect. If it tows 7,500 pounds, I'm all in on the Explorer. And then we got the tow ratings, and all of a sudden, I'm going to have a Durango forever.
5,000.
Yes, 5,000 for the hybrid. And still under 6,000, even if you get the 3-liter twin turbo, which is unfortunate. And the hybrid tows the least. So even the base 2.3-liter turbo tows more than the hybrid. The hybrid system was really not smooth at all at the launch event. I drove a pre-production one all day there. I spent most of my time, oddly enough, in the hybrid mm-hmm. Explorer. And I was really unimpressed with the drivetrain smoothness. They take out the torque converter. They put in a clutch pack. And it was just really not well coordinated. They do seem to fix that. So the one we have this week is a full production Explorer hybrid, and the software is now about as smooth as the BMW and Mercedes plug-in hybrids. The design of the hybrid system is identical to what we see in Mercedes, BMW, and Audi rear-wheel drive plug-in hybrids and hybrids. So it's going to be about as smooth as them, which is to say not as smooth as an Escape hybrid or a Toyota hybrid, because the drivetrain technology is totally different. Mm-hmm. But the key is that it's going to feel and tow like a traditional rear-wheel drive car, since it has that traditional 10-speed automatic in there. Engine braking is better than the Highlander because the engine's bigger and we have the traditional automatic transmission. Logically, transmission cooling is also going to be superior because it's going to cool just like an F-150's 10-speed automatic transmission. Mm-hmm. The one downside, I think, is the fuel economy, which was surprisingly poor, I would say.
While towing, you mean?
Just in general, actually. Oh, everybody, okay. Every other auto reviewer, every other auto outlet that I know that's had a production Explorer in for test has failed to meet their EPA numbers, which are already not great. So the Explorer hybrid in rear-wheel drive is 28 miles per gallon, and the Highlander's high 30s. So two-wheel drive, 28 miles per gallon. All-wheel drive drops it down to only 2 miles per gallon better than the 2.3 liter turbo. So it takes a bigger drop for the all-wheel drive one. And driving here to the office today, I reset the trip fuel economy meter and just to see what I could do. 65 on the highway, going up and over a 2,200 foot mountain pass, but starting at 1,300 feet. So a little bit over, and then long downhill all the way to sea level, all the way to the office. We're 20 feet above sea level here at the office. Mm-hmm. I got 28.1 miles per gallon. That's the best number we've gotten so far. But you do that round trip, and that economy average drops down to about 21.
Interesting. And this is all-wheel drive or two-wheel drive?
This one's the two-wheel drive model.
Dual drive model. Interesting.
Yeah. So the fuel economy is not great.
So this is kind of their bigger vehicle hybrid technology. So,
right.
So I'm hoping, and obviously nobody has driven the F-150 hybrid yet. I'm hoping that the F-150 is more advanced, you know, in smoothness, like you said. It's more advanced in, you know, power delivery, maybe efficiency. But it doesn't appear that, because it's a premium powertrain in the F-150 world, because it's kind of priced near the top of their range next to their diesel, three-liter diesel engine right now. It appears to be a power play in my mind for the F-150.
Right.
You know, that acceleration and not really ultimate efficiency a play.
Right. And it's, I mean, it's worth noting that in their product launch presentation, which unfortunately you guys didn't attend, they never spoke about fuel economy. So the F-150 hybrid is being positioned as the work truck thing, the power thing. They did say it would be class leading in power. So one would assume that would exclude any, you know, supercharged Ram pickup truck in the future, but it would be class leading in power and class leading in torque. So again, logically, based on what we've seen, take the current 3.5 liter twin turbo numbers in the high output form, and then add the 44 horsepower electric motor that we find in the Explorer. That's probably what the number will be. It's my guess. But the big thing there is the inverter capability. So they're not really targeting fuel efficiency. They're targeting the ability to drive your truck to a work site and power a cement mixer and a demo hammer and a whatever. And I'm intrigued by that because this last weekend, we were installing our new solar array at home. And that is literally exactly what I did. I drove my Jeep Grand Cherokee up the hill into the middle of the forest where there's no power. And I powered my cement mixer and my demo hammer because I needed to get grounding rods in the ground and I needed to be able to mix cement. So I'm like, this is the hybrid for me. That is exactly my target market.
So wait, you have a hybrid Jeep?
No, I don't have. I have a regular Jeep, but I ripped out the alternator. I put a 300 amp alternator in the Grand Cherokee so that I could run a 3000 watt inverter so that way you can park it somewhere and have AC power so you can drive electric power tools.
That's awesome. And Ford, of course, their biggest output is 7.2 kilowatts.
That could run my house in the winter. So I'm excited about that because I live in the middle of nowhere. My nearest neighbor is a little over a mile away and power is really unreliable in the winter. So again, good for my demographic because they claim that you could run at full tilt for a day and a half at full load at 7 kilowatts. And I can run my entire house on a 6 kilowatt generator. So I'd be golden.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. And then of course, Ford has announced their all electric F-150. And we don't know a lot about it. We know that the prototype electric F-150 can tow a train on tracks. We know that. But we don't know a lot of other stuff. Initially, Steve said that maybe the F-150 electric truck will be kind of an extension of what Rivian is doing because Ford invested into Rivian. Mm-hmm. But then Ford made a statement that the F-150 electric truck will be unique. You know, it may have some, you know, some shared components of knowledge, but it will be a unique truck to the Ford family. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of all we know.
Right. I'm kind of intrigued a little bit more by the Ford truck possibility, just in a pragmatic sense, because Ford is really targeting commercial applications, commercial customers that are wanting that inverter capability, the way the bed is formatted, they're more likely, I think, than the other companies to give us a standard half-ton sized truck that is half-ton capable and bed-sized like a half-ton truck with all the work-centric features that we see in the F-150, especially like the upcoming hybrid model. And that is the one flaw, I think, with the Cybertruck and the Rivian and the Badger as well, is their size is not quite there. So what I want to know is how really does a 4x8 sheet of plywood fit in a Cybertruck or a Rivian or whatever, you know, how much is sticking out, you know, what's the width between the wheel wells in the rear, what can you actually get back there, and what the payload figures are going to be, because, you know, we're talking about 200 kilowatt hour battery packs minimum in most of these guys here, and that's going to be a 2,000 pound battery pack in all likelihood.
Or more.
Or more, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of battery. And that's going to come right out of your payload. It was one of the reasons we see high payload figures in the F-150 is because they went aluminum and they deleted all the weight that they could get out of the truck. So that means you can stick more stuff back there in the bed. Yeah. So I'm going to be intrigued by some of those numbers. You know, if it's sort of, you know, the argument against RAM has classically been low payload figures. So if it's last generation RAM payload figures where you get 1,100 pounds in your truck, mm-hmm. That's going to be a little bit disappointing.
No, and I think you're right. I mean, it's kind of cliche, the 4x8 sheet of plywood, but you know, that's what people do. They go to Home Depot, yeah, or Lowe's or another improvement store, and they get the materials. They want to bring it home. So it's not just mm-hmm. a lifestyle vehicle, right?
Right.
I think the beautiful part about a pickup truck is that it can do all things or many things, mm-hmm. right? So the fact that you're limiting its capability to maybe just, you know, going surfing or doing, right, you know, rock climbing or, you know, doing active lifestyle. But, you know, if it limits you as far as work, how much work you can do with the truck, I don't think it's great. But, you know, there's room for both, I think. You know, there's, right, room for a lifestyle truck. There's room for a more of a work-ready truck. So really quickly, we don't know the price on the Hummer EV. We mm-hmm. don't know the price or information on the Ford EV. Chevrolet said that their electric Chevy truck is coming also within, yes, 2 years. So, but that's kind of outside of our window of time, right? That's right, beyond 2021.
Right. And that's probably just going to be a Chevy Hummer, to be honest. You know, we all know that, right?
Well, is it?
You know, that's my guess. I'm pretty sure.
I'm hoping it's something else. I'm hoping it's more of a Silverado with Hummer guts in it rather than, yeah, a rebadge. You know, I don't want it to be a rebadge version, basically. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. The Chevy GMC history is pretty rebadgy. So I'm gonna bet on rebadge.
Okay. And I'm not gonna.
But that's me. I'm not gonna promise to eat a horse either on that one. But that's my guess.
let's not eat horses anymore. Okay. We're talking about toy horses, by the way. No.
Yes, toy horses. Because we're not in Canada, so we can't legally eat horse here. But you can in Canada. We could take a trip to Toronto.
Please don't send email or hate mail to us about eating horses.
Yeah, me either. Sorry.
Right. So, and then finally, you know, we have to mention several other companies, right? There's also Lordstown.
Yes.
That mm-hmm. recently also made an announcement about all-electric truck, more of a work-ready truck. At approximately like a $52,000 entry price with in-hub motors. So completely mm-hmm. different approach, right, to everybody else that seems to be working on an electric truck. So now in-hub motors, which is basically each motor is in the wheel instead of being inboard, which is also very clever. I think I like, right, that design. As long as you can keep the weight down, right? Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the Lordstown truck?
I'm intrigued. I wonder how real it is, you know, in my head. It doesn't appear to be very exciting other than very, I mean, it's more functional than exciting, I would say. It reminds me of the Workhorse truck. Do you remember them?
Right. Workhorse is actually part of the investors in this, right?
Yeah.
So they're more of a kind of a Lordstown now, and they have, yeah, a factory. So they're retooling mm-hmm. a factory in Lordstown, Ohio. So mm-hmm. that's the name of the company. And they're calling their truck Endurance. And you're right. It's kind of, you know, I've been wanting to test that Workhorse truck for forever. And I've asked them 1,000 times and I never got one. I never had one.
Boy, is that truck ugly. Wow.
That old Workhorse truck was something else. So there's them. And they're saying, you know, within a year, potentially. So they have a kind of they're a horse in the race, so mm-hmm. to speak, using the horse analogies. And then finally, there are a couple of other companies. And once again, I'm going down the list of investment, right?
Right.
How much these companies have invested into them. And I think next on my mind is Bollinger, right? Mm-hmm, So we've seen the Bollinger B1 SUV and B2 truck. So those are coming. And they're once again kind of a more premium product.
Yeah, I just hope they're better built than all the ones they've been showing so far, because the ones they show off at the auto shows are pretty bad, like in the assembly quality and
right,
you know, lots of weird visible bolts, and yeah, they're really rough prototypes. So I'm hoping that they're going in a better direction, because some things are pretty cheesy.
So, and they have about 200 miles range currently. That's their promise,
right,
with their capability. But it's their truck is very square, like you said, very square, and it's supposed to be modular, to where you can like take off a fender yourself and replace it yourself if you want, or take out the door or a seat. Removable panels once again, so you have kind of a clear sky view, or actually glass or composite roof panels. Mm-hmm. $125,000 starting price. That's quite high.
It's spendy, and the range is low. And you know, they all tout these performance figures and these towing figures, but then you know, maybe now it's time to talk about the towing numbers. But like you know, as you guys have noticed, and you're towing with EVs. Towing is terrible because there's not much energy on board. So your tow range is going to be drastically lower than people, I think, are thinking. It's not going to be half. It's going to be less than half of the stated range, I would say, if you're going to tow a camper of any reasonable size. If you're going to tow, you know, your RV trailer that's, you know, 20 foot something, a little bit wider than your truck, obviously a lot taller than your truck. 5,000-6,000 pounds, even that, which is not a lot of weight, generally speaking, your tow range is going to be incredibly poor. And in an EV, we don't have charging stations that are well designed for that, for spending large amounts of time there, because the lower your range ends up being, the more you're going to want to stuff in your battery in a charging session. So you're not going to really be willing to stay at that charger, DC fast charger, just till you're 80% full. You're probably going to want to go all the way to 100, because you need that extra oomph.
Yes.
And that means spending an hour to an hour and a half at your charging station.
At best case.
And then what do you do with your trailer in the current charging stations? We're talking massive parking lots now that are going to have to be designed for something with a recreational vehicle attached to it that's going to charge it. That's kind of tricky in my mind. And, you know, I was driven home again recently with my experience in the Durango. So we were going to do a range comparison video here, but you guys beat us to it. So I threw all the video away and scrapped it because it sounded a little too copycat somehow. Guys were doing the towing videos with the Model X. That's okay. Yeah. It was funny actually, because I was Roman and I were talking about it at an event, and he's like, "Yeah, we just finished filming," and I'm like, "Oh, I only filmed half of it, so never mind." So I threw it away. But we did some runs with just making the analogy to more traditional SUVs. Like we had a Durango SRT in for a weekly review, and if you drove the Durango SRT at 55 miles an hour. On level highway, you would get about 25, 26 miles per gallon. It wasn't half bad for, you know, 6.4 liters.
Oh, it's incredible, dude.
Yeah.
It's
incredible. But you stick my 24-foot flatbed trailer. It's 24 feet bed plus tongue length plus ramp. So it's a long one, and it weighs 3,800 pounds on its own. Just stick that guy on the Durango SRT. The fuel economy drops down to about 19.9 miles per gallon, just under 20 miles per gallon. So you've already had this...
Empty trailer.
It's empty. Absolutely empty. Most as aerodynamic as that guy's going to get. Drops down to there. Then we put two 5,000-gallon water tanks on the back, which weigh nothing. They weigh a few hundred pounds each, but they're big. They're 10-foot diameter tanks. Yes. Put two tanks on it, towed that on the same route, same speed, 55 miles an hour, 12 miles per gallon.
So basically half. You just half. Yes. But not a lot of weight.
Not a lot of weight. Right. Yeah. So we're still talking relatively light. And then, you know, towed a RAV4 hybrid. RAV4 hybrid, we towed actually very similar elevation change to what you guys do in your long distance towing tests up to the Eisenhower Tunnel. Mm-hmm. Only I'm starting from sea level and going to a little over 7,000 feet, and your guys are starting at 5,000 feet and going up from there.
Yeah.
But similar elevation change.
Yeah.
And the RAV4 hybrid about dropped its fuel economy in half. It actually averaged about 20 miles per gallon on the round trip versus 40. And that was with a 2,000 pound trailer, much smaller, 2,000 pound, 14 foot box trailer. So, you know, you stick, and of course these guys are less aerodynamic. So like a Durango or a RAV4 or any of the other traditional gasoline EVs, they're less aerodynamic now in their current form. So they're not depending as much on skinny tires and swoopy jelly bean shapes to try and get their range. So what we've seen is in EVs or more aero-focused vehicles that you're going to try and tow with, the range drop is more severe even than half in a lot of these towing situations.
Yeah, and like you said, we did the Model X Tesla comparison against the Lexus SUV. And the reason why we picked Lexus LX and Tesla Model X, they're about the same price. They're both almost $100,000. And one is a giant gas V8, kind of like a truck engine. And the other one can tow about 5,000 pounds, which is currently the highest towing rating on an electric vehicle for the Model X SUV. And we compared them. Yes, and like you said, huge drops in range when towing.
And you guys weren't towing a very big trailer, really. I mean, all things considered.
Yeah, our trailer was 18 feet long. Once again, a heavy-duty trailer, a tandem axle, dual axle. Yep. And we had a Subaru DL wagon on top. So Subaru is a very small aerodynamic thing.
Yep.
Total weight was about 5,000. So Subaru plus the trailer. So once again, I think you hit it on the head. If you would have to if you had to drive an hour, let's say, hour and a half, right? Go about 100 miles.
Yep.
Then charge for an hour, go another 100 miles. If you're on a long trip, right? That could drive most people.
That's a bummer.
Yes.
That's a bummer. And then, of course, you're going to have to hunt for the charging station. So the way the charging stations are arranged, you know, I think Tesla's innovation, I think arguably was not charging connectors or batteries necessarily, battery capacity necessarily. I think one of their big innovations was their charging network's location. So, you know, Tesla realized that they needed to control where the stations are located to facilitate long distance travel. But on the other hand, they're all located to facilitate long distance travel in a car driven the way normal drivers are driving. So every 200 to 300 miles apart are, you know, station distance. So they're not really well situated for towing either. That's going to require a massive additional investment if they have a Cybertruck and they're really going to be pushing recreational towing, that sort of thing. How's that really going to work, you know, for those longer distances? Aside from the fact that once you get to that national park, is there going to be a charging station for you there? You know, if you're going to want to run anything off your truck's inverter system, you've got this big battery and you might want to use it there, but are you going to be able to charge it there?
Yeah, likely not. Or if you are, maybe it's going to be busy, like you said.
Yeah. Like, I'm intrigued by the Rivian because Rivian is pushing their off-road ability so super hard. So you drive your Rivian to Mammoth or wherever you're going to go off-roading.
Remote spot,
yeah. And then you're going to go off-roading in your truck, which is really going to suck up some battery power. Are you actually going to be able to get home, you know, now that you've used all your battery?
You know what you do then? You unfurl your solar array, okay, off of your truck.
It's a lot of solar array.
And wait a day or two.
Oh, it's going to be a long time. We're going off grid at home, and so we half of the array is in. We just installed 4,000 watts of solar panels. That takes up 30 feet by 20 feet. It's a lot of solar panels, and that's, you know, you're going to get 4,000 watts on a good day on the equator in a lab, because in our real world maybe 3,000 watts is the most you can get. So it's going to take a long time to charge a big battery, even with massive numbers of panels.
Yeah, and I was joking. I mean, it's not really realistic. You might pick up a few miles of range, right?
You could, given time.
So maybe if you are camping somewhere, it'll be enough, you know, if you're using solar generated energy to go down to a town and then charge, right? So that might be a solution, but.
But, or it could be that maybe the nature of that kind of activity is going to change, and we're going to see more RV style electrical connections at parks to facilitate this. That's possible.
Well, by the way, campgrounds have electric right now.
Yeah. I mean, because plug your RV in.
Well, because you have to run air conditioners and all that stuff on your RV.
To go camping places where people don't have RVs, so there's never a power connection where I camp.
Right. So it depends on what you want to do. But where I go camping, it's usually at the lake here near Fort Collins. And there's a real fully equipped campground because we want to have access to the lake, which is we don't have a lot in Colorado. Boom, you have electricity right there. Level two, basically.
Right.
Capability right there.
Which is definitely very handy. And that could help solve the problem. Range is definitely going to be the bear there. And that's why I'm really on the fence. You know, in my head, I'm torn between two worlds. Like, if the 1RT happens on time, is that where I should go? Should I get one? But then am I going to be able to live with it? Or should I just buy the Durango off lease? I haven't figured that one out yet.
Or maybe you should do something else and get like a plug-in hybrid Jeep when it comes out. How about that? Like
towing would be the question. You know, could it tow 8,000 pounds easily?
No, the Wrangler 4xe, right, is coming.
Yeah, it's not going to tow anything.
No. It's probably going to tow, 3,000, 3,500 pounds maybe?
Yeah.
So from that
standpoint, short wheelbase, off-road oriented suspension, it's not going to be great to tow with anyway.
Right. So you probably have to wait for another solution. Maybe, you know what you could get in the future? You could get a straight six diesel Tahoe.
You know, the Tahoe's a little big. The one thing that I like about the Durango is that it's smaller. So you can tow, it's just over 200 inches long. So it's definitely shorter than the Tahoe and narrower than the Tahoe. So I find that especially backing up trailers in the area where I live, I live in the Santa Cruz Mountains. So, you know, narrow dirt roads and gravel roads and parking spaces in between trees. Mm-hmm. So the one problem I noticed dealing with towing with larger things, like you grab an, you know, Ram 3500, you know, and you're, you know, moving something with it. Because my heavy duty trailer is rated for over 10,000 pounds. But getting that trailer, backing it up is a pain because the truck just doesn't turn very tight. So you can't get the trailer to do what you want to do sometimes because the tongue length is too long. This is between the first axle and the tongue is too long. So you just can't make it turn. I drove myself to absolute frustration trying to park the trailer once, and I just said, forget it. And I disconnected the truck and reconnected my Grand Cherokee because I have a lifted Grand Cherokee, reconnected the Grand Cherokee and just tootled it back in the parking spot because it just turned tighter.
Mm-hmm. You know what you could do? You can do a tank turn with your trailer.
That would be, I'm really intrigued by that because that would be kind of interesting.
I wouldn't recommend that. I would not recommend that.
I don't know if I would recommend it either, but it strikes me as interesting in that maybe in some situations, this would help you better align the trailer somewhere. I'm intrigued to see what that looks like. So I could also see jackknifing being very easy.
But, yeah, and hitting the side of your truck could be very easy. And then on tank turn, it seems like there are two schools of thought. You know, there are some people that say it's useful for tight maneuvers. Other people said, you know, it's just for show. You know, it's silly and it's dumb. You know, it's just a party trick that you can show off to your friend, but then you could tear up your tires. You could do a lot of damage.
Definitely do that. I'm going to be intrigued to see if there is a more off-road focused application of this. Like I could see in my head the ability to control the motors independently, maybe helping shorten the turning radius on tighter trails, but then you run the risk of sliding down the hill if you're on an incline. Because if you have some slip there, as you would have if you're trying to manipulate things in that way to turn more aggressively, you know, maybe you could end up sliding down the hill and then bopping the side of your truck on a rock. I'm going to be interested to see how that works in person.
Yeah, especially on the side slope. That's what you mean, right? On the
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you know, we're kind of running out of time, but there are other companies we haven't even mentioned. You know, there's Atlas that also is working on an electric truck. And there are several others. But I think all of them, it seems like all of them initially said end of 2020. And then they were like waiting for each other. You know, all right, you go next. You go next. Mm-hmm. And then Rivian said summer or June 2021. And it seems like everybody's like, okay, they said they're being delayed. So now we can delay. You know, it seems like everybody's playing this kind of, we want to get to market, but it's hard to get to market. So we want to, you know, So yeah. It seems to be like a waiting game.
I'm going to be intrigued to see how many traditional truck shoppers move. I'm wondering who is pre-ordering the Rivian and who has pre-ordered a Cybertruck. Because I think they're the only ones. Can you pre-order a Badger yet?
Yes, you can now.
Okay, so you can. Yes. So the 3.3, right, that you can pre-order, because the Hummer pre-orders aren't open yet, as I recall, right?
Correct.
So I think, 3 that you I can pre-order. I wonder what
to pre-order an Atlas, but they have a kind of a facility in Arizona mm-hmm. also, but I don't.
I'm just interested
them.
Who these shoppers are. Are they truck owners that are interested in an electric truck, or are they electric shoppers that are interested in a truck? And I think that's kind of
it's kind of
a different person.
I think it's the latter, you know, like you were saying, maybe it's a person who already has an electric vehicle or maybe a plug-in hybrid or some sort of a hybrid and they need more capability. So maybe they're ordering, you know, obviously we'll have to wait and see because none of these companies are really kind of saying, you know, what audiences are. When I talked to Rivian, they said, you know, they're trying to hit the white space.
Yeah, like you said, and they're trying to go for outdoorsy.
Yeah, outdoorsy, and also between the midsize and the full-size truck. They're trying to create something else, which is always tricky, right?
Yeah. Rivian's marketing reminds me a lot of the Bronco stuff that we've seen, to be honest. Like that, the way that they're focusing on what they think is a customer and Bronco's customer, I'm like, these are the same people.
Yeah, they are. And it's funny, the Bronco is not a hybrid. You know, you know, they might announce something, but not yet. I haven't seen anything on the Bronco hybrid or anything of that sort. But you know, both Rivian and Bronco, they're using rock climbing as their thing, right? You gotta go climb rocks.
Rock climbing and, you know, the ever popular images of Rivian driving their truck through the dusty dirt and back and forth and spinning around in circles and you know, all that usual stuff.
Okay.
I'm intrigued.
So Alex, let's reconvene soon. Maybe in June of next year, and let's see, you know, how this plays out.
June of next year is soon.
I guess in the
ongoing global pandemic, there is no time. So
time has lost meaning. But I hope I talk to you before then. But on this topic, let's reconvene when we actually have something on the market.
Yeah,
and actually see what's going on, and then also we can also argue what's better, SUV or truck for Tony.
Oh, that's a tricky one. I'm very torn. I am open to suggestion on this topic. So yes, let's do that.
Yeah, I think they're good and bad, like you said. You know, maneuverability versus capability. I mean, there's good and bad in both.
Yeah,
we can discuss a little bit more about that. But thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thanks very much.
And of course, you're Alex Honnatos on YouTube, right?
Yes, you can find us over there at youtube.com/AlexHonnatos. And there's merch there. You can save the amber lamps, all that sort of stuff. And we have new merch over there at TFL. You can see the sporty new shirt there.
Yes, we're working with duckcompany.co.com. And the TFL store is where you can buy our new merchandise, which is, I think is well designed. They did a great job.
Yeah, it all looked really good. I'm right. Jealous now. My merch is very sad looking in comparison.
But it's kind of humorous and nice and cool. So, all right. Thanks, Alex. We'll take care.
Talk to you later.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.